Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and I get excited this time every month when we have the opportunity to talk to Vicki Jarrett of Our State Magazine about the current issue. And Vicki, welcome.
Thank you.
You're excited about this issue, aren't you?
Oh, I am. I am. It's a beautiful issue, and lots of fun stories in here, lots of very interesting stories with some depth to them, and it was a great issue to put together.
Well, speaking of Our State Magazine, Ron Stutz is helping us today. He's got his engineer's hats on, but we've persuaded him to tell the story about Our State Magazine at Ocracoke. And Bill Morris is listening in. We'll get to him in a minute, but he knows about all this part of the country.
Well, DG and Vicki, I just wanted to tell you that we went to Ocracoke. First time I'd ever spent any time there. We spent a week there on vacation. My wife, myself, my son, his girlfriend, my daughter and her friend, and two dogs and a cat. And we rented a house down there, had a great time. If anybody's got a house you want to let me stay at, let me know. I'd love to go back. But we went to a store over on British Cemetery Road.
Uh-huh.
And anybody who's been to Ocracoke knows where that is. And we walked in, struck a conversation with this guy who turns out to be from Durham and had spent a lot of time in Chapel Hill. And he was talking about eventually retiring, selling the business and getting something else and eventually retiring, because he's probably in his mid-50s, late 50s. And we said, what do you want to do? And he said, well, you know, are you familiar with Our State Magazine?
Wow.
And we said, yeah. I said, well, I get it all the time on a regular basis. And he said, well, I read that magazine all the time. I just love that magazine. And he says, I just read it from cover to cover every time I get it. And it's just, there's so many great places to go in North Carolina. He says, I don't even want to go anywhere in my retirement until I've exhausted all those opportunities.
Wonderful story.
And I said, well, listen, I just happen to be good friends with and work with a guy who writes some stuff in there. And he said, who? I said, D.G. Martin. He said, oh, never heard of him. But seriously, he said he had read some of your stuff.
God, you told that story differently than me. You're oh my gosh.
Well, but you're well represented on Ocracoke.
Nah, wonderful.
That's terrific. Well, the guy who writes some of the best coastal articles is a Chapel Hill and now Carteret County guy, I guess, Bill Morris. And Bill, you're up here today in Chapel Hill, and thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Bill wrote two articles that we're going to talk about later on, but has agreed to join us and sort of help us visit about Our State Magazine. Vicki, before Ron and I interrupted you, you were going to tell us about some of your favorite articles.
Well, you know, as I said, I really enjoy putting this together because it has so much depth about what has happened in North Carolina in agriculture and what is happening today with an eye toward the future. And I think sometimes we tend to think that the farm is and farm life is sort of dying out, but I don't think that's true. And so this was a wonderful celebration to put together. But we had some other stories that just thoroughly enjoyable. One was a great story about the recreation of an old river freighter called a bateau that is now up and down the waters of the Dan River. That's a really great story and a wonderful, if you need a short for the day trip, you know, that would be a great little adventure.
Well, that's not too far from Chapel Hill, is it?
I mean,
we could drive up and ride on this boat. I have to admit, I haven't read that article yet, but that's the kind of thing I'd love to do.
I had an opportunity last summer to take a little river outing on one of these, and it's such a piece of history to ride on this. It's very rough-hewn, and it's very much a workhorse of the river. But just, it was just a great adventure, and I highly recommend it to anybody who really wants to step back in time instead of canoeing or kayaking on the dam, which is also fun, but take this little river trip on a bateau. And then you've got a great story in here about the Bluff Lodge up at Doughton Park, which
is
one of my favorite.
Let's talk about that. Thank you so much. Let's talk about it. We've got great articles by Bill Morris, but we've got Bob Garner ready to join us.
Oh, wonderful.
And
hey there.
Hey, Bob Garner, welcome.
Hold on just a second, Everett. Hey, DG.
How are you? We're visiting with Vicki Jarrett, Ron Stutz, our number one man at WCHL, Bill Morris, Vicki, me, and you. And one of the central features of the magazine this month is Bob Garner's great article on barbecue. And Vicki, I wonder if you'd tell us what's going on with you and Bob Garner.
Well, I'll tell you, Bob has been so gracious to eat his way around North Carolina on our behalf, and so we got him to eat barbecue this month and to share his reflections on just what goes into some of the best barbecue that North Carolina has to offer.
Vicki, you know, I'm not a competitor of Bob Garner's in any respect, but I stole a lot of stuff from him when you and I put together our series of articles on home cooking places along the interstate highways.
Right.
And now I've just taken a look at this article, Bob Garner, and you've given me a couple of other places nearby the interstates that I didn't know about that are wonderful places to eat.
That's right.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's just a constantly changing landscape out there, isn't it?
It really is. Tell us a little bit about what you learned and what you've shared with us in this, a new defining article about barbecue in North Carolina.
Well, I don't know about that. You know, I guess if you you think about something and you write about it in various formats over a long period of time, you maybe kind of crystallize your thinking. But you know, this was just a very fond article about a lot that I've learned and a lot that I've experienced, and just very fond reflections certainly a big cultural icon in North Carolina. And I find more and more that people really hold on to this because they sense that it's something about that has something to do with the state's past that they just don't want to let go. Everyone knows that you don't want to eat more barbecue than is good for you.
We identified what that level is.
I was going to say, I don't really know what that is, but, you know, I can't remember which North Carolina governor it was who says no man can become governor of North Carolina without eating much more barbecue than is good for him. and that's certainly true, but it's certainly all about just at the heart of North Carolina, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tell us about some of these places that you visited for this article, Bob.
Well,
can you remember?
Brady's Barbecue.
All right, help me out here a little bit.
Yeah.
I can't remember the specific places that I mentioned.
Mentioned Grady's Barbecue in Dudley.
Yeah, and that's actually pronounced Grady's.
Grady's.
Yeah.
Grady's, sorry about that.
Grady's, or as it's locally pronounced, Grady's in Dudley, is one of those places that's really off the beaten track.
Now tell us where Dudley is.
Dudley is just south of Goldsboro. As you're headed toward Mount Olive on 117. So you kind of head out of Goldsboro south on 117 and go down about, 8 or 9 miles to Dudley and hang a left and go way out in the country, and you find Grady's Barbecue. And it's one of those places that the locals know about, farmers who live in the area. But unless you go looking for it, you're probably not going to run across it.
Well, this is still pit cooked.
It really is.
Here at Grady's, too.
Stephen and Jerry Grady started the business because he used to work for a sawmill, and he got a steady supply of oak slabs and decided to go in the barbecue business. And they still cook whole pigs over oak wood, and the smoke and the fat dripping in the fire there, and just all
making me hungry.
Yeah, all the country cooking that goes with it. It's just a fabulous place.
And then you also mentioned Cook's Barbecue in Lexington.
Yeah, Cook's is one of those kind of off the beaten track barbecue places. Everyone knows about Lexington, but unless you go looking for Cook's, you're not going to just happen to ride by. It's on the way to Southmont and High Rock Lake, and you kind of have to go through some twists and turns to find it, but it's in a weather-beaten building that's just the very definition of what a barbecue place ought to look like.
And I should add that we've provided these directions, too, in the article, so if somebody really wants to find some of these that are off the beaten path, we'll get you there.
Absolutely, and it is well worth the trip. You know, you'll pass a couple of weather-beaten signs that'll make you wonder whether the place is still in business, but when you get there, you'll say, boy, it sure is.
Well, Bob, another place that you introduced me to is the Tar Heel Q.
Tar Heel Q is west of Lexington, another one sort of off the beaten track barbecue places. It's located around 6 or 7 miles west of Lexington on Highway 64 as you're headed toward Mocksville. And it isn't that old a place, but they've really made the commitment to do it right, to cook really good wood-cooked barbecue. Just they cook it slowly until it's tender. There's a big wood pile out back, and they don't do that just for show. When you bite into that barbecue, you know that wood smoke flavor has just infused the meat.
Well, I just want to add one thing, is when you read Bob's article about whether it's fried chicken or barbecue or whatever, one of the things that's so enjoyable is the way he can take a taste and describe it in such beautiful language that you taste it right there with him. And he's done that with the barbecue, certainly. He's got some, like, a flavorful, crusty meat over honest-to-goodness hardwood coals, you know, and you start seeing this and tasting it, it'll make your mouth water.
Well, you can praise him for that. I have to cuss him for it, because every time I read one of Bob Gardner's articles, I want to go out and get something to eat that makes me fat. Listen, we need to take a break, guys. We'll be right back. We're talking to Bob Gardner, Bill Morris, Ron Stutz, and editor of Our State Magazine, Vicki Jarrett. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the August issue of Our State Magazine with Vicki Jarrett, Our State's editor, and also with Bob Garner, who's telling us about about North Carolina barbecue based on a great article he's got in Our State. And we're also visiting with Chapel Hill's own Bill Morris. Now, Chapel Hill has to share Bill Morris with the folks down in Carteret County, but we're all visiting about the articles in the magazine. And right now, Bob Garner, we're focusing on you and barbecue. And
I've got a question for Bob.
Okay, Bill Morris.
Not directly related to that article, but is it true that the Haw River is the official dividing line between Eastern and Western style barbecue?
You know, I'm not sure that I really had heard that specific, but that's about as good a definition as you're going to find now that you mention it. You know, that just really makes sense. Intuitively, I would say that's right on.
My friend Dave Southern, born and raised in Burlington, gave me that little bit of geography.
Yeah, well, I live in Burlington, you know, and I've often written that area around there has a little bit of barbecue schizophrenia. You know, they're not quite sure what's going on, and it's always been sort of reflected in the pink slaw that they serve. You know, they have the red barbecue slaw in honest-to-goodness Lexington barbecue country, and when you go east of the Haw River or east of Raleigh or however you want to divide that up, you usually get white or yellow slaw. But when you go to those places around Mebane and Burlington, like the A&M Grill over in Mebane or J&G Barbecue, which burned recently in Burlington, they serve, and several other places serve pink slaw. It's kind of a crossover.
Aww.
Yeah, it's kind of a mayonnaise-based and the barbecue slaw. So they can sort of sit on the fence there.
Well, Bob, in your article in the August issue of Our State Magazine, you back away. How am I going to say this? You say that there's not as much difference between Eastern and Western North Carolina barbecue as there is between North Carolina barbecue and the barbecue in other regions
of the
state.
The world. Yeah.
What? I mean, this is what. Are you taking away the most fun thing we have to argue about in North Carolina?
No, I was just trying to make the point that it's something that we all take a great deal of care about maintaining the difference, just because it's fun. You know, nobody wants to tear down that particular block, set of blocks, and start over. So people just for it's one of those distinctions, in my opinion, that's more for the sake of argument, so people can put up their dukes and say, "Well, I don't want any of that ketchup-based stuff over in the West." Well, you know, anybody who really eats barbecue around the Lexington area certainly would never describe it as ketchup-based.
Right.
It may have a little ketchup in it, but it's a thin, very vinegary sauce. that just reflects the facts that by the time barbecue got big in that part of the country, they were eating tomatoes, whereas when it started in eastern North Carolina, no one ate tomatoes, and so they wouldn't have put tomato in the sauce.
I think that's one thing that our readers can appreciate about this series of articles that you're doing, is that not only are we hitting some of the great places where you can go and get barbecue today, but it gives us some of the culture and some of the history of this food in North Carolina and how it came to be such a matter of debate for us.
Well, that's right. You know, it was said the English settled the eastern part of the state by and large, and so eastern English customs prevailed, and it was just more of a common thing there to cook a whole pig and to season it with this hot, salty vinegar, which mm-hmm. was commonly used in every household in those days. And then you had the more German influences up in the Piedmont area of the state, where they used the pork shoulder rather than the whole pig. And they liked their sauce just a little bit sweeter, a little bit milder, maybe not as much pepper, and met with a little tomato in it, mm-hmm. more of a sweet and sour taste. It just reflected the taste patterns of the settlers who came down in the Piedmont region from Pennsylvania.
But the one thing we can all agree on is when we talk to anybody from outside our territory is that barbecue is pork.
That's exactly
right. It is not beef. It's not brisket. Don't talk to me about something you put on your backyard grill.
It's also a noun and not a verb.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, in other parts of the when you start talking to people about barbecue, you have to do some defining and sort of laying out the parameters, that's for sure. I went in search of what I'd heard was some good barbecue up in Boston one time, and it was like Polish sausage being cooked on a grill.
That was a shock.
Well, before we, there's several more things I want you to talk about, and we're going to hold you as long as we can, but one of the places that you mentioned, I'm ashamed to say, I traveled this road a lot and have never stopped at Troutman's Barbecue in Denton. And, man, the way you describe that place makes me want to stop what I'm doing right now and go down there.
Well, you know, most people, if they're going to Denton, do so for the old-time Threshers reunion.
Right.
And
I guess is it near Asheboro? I mean, is that sort of the best way to say it? Or
Yeah.
Beyond Asheboro, right. From Chapel Hill's perspective.
Right, that's correct. And it's down there sort of in the roughly Baden Lake, Uarese area.
Yeah.
And so whereas most people would have gone down there to see the old-time farm machinery at a big reunion they have every year, Troutman's Barbecue is a great reason to drive 20 or so miles out of. You know, I'm a great one for making these cross-country trips for the sake of barbecue. And you can build a trip around that, and a lot of people do that these days, and that's certainly worthwhile.
Well, I'm going to build a trip around going to Denton and to Troutman's Barbecue. That's I grew up in Davidson, which is not that far from Concord, and that's a kind of familiar name in that region.
Yeah, it's not connection. There are some other Troutmans in the barbecue business, and they certainly serve a good product. But in my humble opinion, this one's right at the mountaintop as far as that goes.
Let me ask you this, Bob, and I bet you all of us are worried about this, but these home cooking places and family-run businesses are really... Are 20 years from now, are we going to be able to go visit a family-owned wood-cooked barbecue place in North Carolina?
Yeah, I think there will be fewer of them, but I think there will be certain ones that just become real destinations because they're historical. They'll be very much a throwback to an early era. And, you know, barbecue has really got a huge upsurge in popularity after World War II when people came back. Gas was no longer rationed. Cars were being made again. People had traveled during the war and had gotten off, you know, just staying right where they were raised. And so it was nothing to run down the road. Let's just go for a ride. That was a popular expression in the 50s. Let's just go for a ride. And people hadn't been able to do that during the wartime years. So they would go out for a ride and they would stop at a barbecue. And they did curb service And it was just one of those things. It was kind of an early forerunner of fast food in North Carolina, and that's where some of these legendary places became popular. But now, of course, people have other choices, so they eat barbecue for a specific reason because they want to celebrate that particular part of our culture.
Well, and I think as we get busier, as we have more and more choices, there seems to be a trend toward appreciating this more.
Well, it's interesting to me that they have changed so little over time.
Mm-hmm.
When I first got to Durham, we're more years ago than I like to say that, you know, Bullock's was there, and you can go back today, and it's pretty much exactly mm-hmm. the same. And there are very, very few things that are still the same.
Well, it is the thing that captivates me about these places that, Bob, you bring us in touch with through our state and on television and your books, is these are kind of like the opportunity not just to go visit a museum where you go and look at displays, but you get to go back sort of in time and live life as people lived it. As Bill Morris said, in his view, 20 years is a long time ago. In my view, it's like 50 years. I can go back in time, or maybe even to my parents' time. That's an exciting part of what you share with us.
And that's why people, I think, will hold on to this, mm-hmm. because we're all longing for, you know, you've heard this said, you know, the more we encounter high tech, the more we want high touch. It's a need in our lives, and so picking out those little places that we've made a tradition, and we've become part of a longer tradition. It's kind of paying homage to a part of the past before we jump back into the hustle and bustle and go on about our modern lives, which we don't have that much control over sometimes.
Well, this is really great.
Pretty philosophical, isn't it?
But well said, well said.
Bob, thanks for spending so much time with you. One last question, at least for me, is later on we're going to talk about a wonderful article Vicki's got on the North Carolina Agriculture Hall of Fame with Charles Blackburn, and I'm looking forward to that. But is there a North Carolina Barbecue Hall of Fame, or can we get one started?
Now, there's a thought. Let's you and I talk about that. You know, there would certainly be it would be a fascinating place, let me put it that way, because
there have to be some taste testing.
I'll volunteer to be on the committee that qualifies people.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Well, I think with Ron Stutz and the four of us, all of us together, we probably could get something going that would be fun. And if
you can definitely count on me. Promise.
I think we have a committee.
All right. Well, folks, we need to take a break, but we'll come back, and later on sometime we'll report on the project of the North Carolina Barbecue Hall of Fame, president of whom will be Bob Garner, and the rest of us will be his servants. Bob, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for sharing your time with us.
Thank you for this great article. As always, it was just a pleasure. Vicki, good to talk to you.
Good
and
to talk
Bill
to you.
And Ron, thanks.
And the rest of us will be right back after this short break.
Okay, so long.
Thanks a lot, Bob. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Ron Stutz and I are visiting with Vicki Jarrett, with Bill Morris, and now with Charles Blackburn about the August issue of Our State Magazine, in which, Charles, you have an article about the North Carolina Hall of Fame, Agriculture Hall of Fame. Now, what's this all about?
Well, our feature section this month is focusing on agriculture, and one of the things that we wanted to take a look at is, you know, we keep hearing about tobacco farming becoming less and less important in the state, and we kind of get a sense that maybe the farm and farm life is sort of a dying breed. And so we wanted to really examine that and see what is happening in North Carolina. And one of the things that was interesting was to discover that here we have a North Carolina Agricultural Hall of Fame that has honored the accomplishments of 33 men and women over the years. And interestingly, we have a comment in here by our current Commissioner of Agriculture, Stephen Troxler, that when he notes that agriculture is still our top industry in North Carolina. And I think we kind of lose sight of that sometimes. And so this article that Charles put together is a wonderful tribute to many of these people who have been so important to this industry in this state.
Well, Charles, what did you learn writing this article that that surprised you?
Oh, I learned so many things when writing these articles. That's one of the joys of it. But I think one of the interesting things is that, unlike other halls of fame, there's some interesting connections among the people who are in our Agricultural Hall of Fame. For example, there are two brothers, Carl and Scott, and Ralph Scott are in it. There's a father-son, Benjamin Kilgore, and his son Jim, and also a husband and a wife, Harry and Margaret Caldwell. And I think this really speaks to the fact that for a long time, farming has tended to be a family enterprise.
Right, and that's one thing I think that came out both in your article and in several of the other things we did, that the whole family is really part of the family business.
Yes, and just a lot of very interesting people that it was just great to have a chance to find out a little more about. The only problem was we, just for limits of space, we had to kind of focus on a few of them rather than all of them. I think you could easily, do longer article on them all.
Well, let me tell you about one guy that interested me for several reasons, and that was, Leonidas Polk?
Right, Polk, yes.
And for, when I saw that you'd written this article, I said, well, you know, this is Chapel Hill, and the people in the Agriculture Hall of Fame, these are all going to be North Carolina State people, and the Chapel Hill folks aren't going to appreciate us talking about them so much. But then I saw Leonidas Polk, and saw that his connection is not with Chapel Hill and is not with State, but with Davidson College.
Right.
and the first guy that you mentioned in your article is attended Davidson College, and so we don't brag about it. He did help get North Carolina State established. And
yes.
And the other feature of this that is that he got the Progressive Farmer started.
That's right.
And the Progressive Farmer is sort of the precursor of Southern Living. Is that right? I mean, does
yes,
all that work? So we got a magazine situation. We got Vicki Jarrett, the editor of Our State, talking about this. So all of these things in North Carolina come together.
Right. And it was in Progressive Farmer that he kind of kept up a steady editorial drumbeat to establish North Carolina State University has an agricultural college, and he's really credited with getting that movement started and giving it a lot of publicity.
Well, Charles, this is a fine article about our history. Notwithstanding what Vicki said that Commissioner Trexler said about agricultural still being a number one industry in North Carolina, it is different, and the family farm aspects of it, I don't want to say they're fading away, but it's not exactly the same as it was 50
That's
or 100
right.
years ago.
That's right.
But there's some remnants of it left. And Bill Marsh, you've written an article that sort of show about how alternative farming can help keep the families involved. Will you tell us about that article? Or maybe, Vicki, I should get you to tell us about
how it fits. No, we can let Bill jump in. We asked him to kind of do a roundup story on several farms that maybe are no longer doing conventional crops or products, but they're using their farm for alternative uses. And some of the suggestions that we had were like a truffle farm. Some of the ones we have in here are a garlic farm, one called
Lavender Farm.
Lavender, yeah, which I grew lavender for a while, and it's a wonderful scent, and it dries so nicely, and I just can't even imagine how wonderful it would be to have a whole farm of lavender, but I digress.
No, keep talking.
But
this
you have
great.
Six wonderful farms listed here, including Chapel Hill Creamery, which is one, very near and dear to our location right here this morning.
And the Chapel Hill Creamery people are fairly well known, I think, or are getting better known. That's Florence Holly and Portia McKnight, and they they bought land out off Dairyland Road outside of town back in 2001, and now they're making award-winning cheeses and have a herd of 18 Jersey cows.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting, too, that they have, as they're producing the cheese, it leaves a byproduct of whey. And as a result, they have a herd of very well-fed pigs, is the way you put it in the article, which I thought was interesting, too.
Well, for anyone listening who's ever eaten at the Lantern Restaurant in Chapel Hill, they serve a lot of pork that is grown by as a byproduct of the cheese making they do. And it's a technique that goes back to Parma, Italy. For every pound of cheese that's made, they have a byproduct of 8 pounds of whey. And at first it seemed like a problem to get rid of all the whey. But then they found out about the way they do it in the old country in Italy, and they actually feed it to the pigs that they have. They have 8 pigs on the farm, and it makes for some very very rich ham.
Well, the whey is the liquid residue. Is that right? It's kind of like, it looks like water, or is it?
It's watery solids.
Uh-huh.
Is, I guess, the best way to.
It's a part of the milk and cream that is broken down when you're making cheese.
Right.
And how do you feed that? The pigs drink it. They don't eat it. Isn't that right? Or is it?
I didn't actually see them eating it, so I can't tell you.
You didn't drink a little cup of the whey?
I did.
It doesn't sound appealing, actually.
I did sample some delicious cheeses that they make out there. And one of the things about the article, which started out to be actually about, almost New Age agriculture, I found out that it ended up that there are 2 farms out of the 6 that I visited that are actually family farms that go back 3 or 4 generations. One is a sod farm, the Bradshaw sod farm outside of Raleigh, and it's just, they went from tobacco to vegetables to now they grow sod, but it's still been in the same family. And then another one, it was the Curtis Smith's farm, which is down in Lenoir County, and that's about, it's been in his family for 4 generations, and that was about changing technologies. He grows a lot of strawberries and a lot of he grows Sprite melons, and he's just changed crops over time. And then you have other farmers like Chapel Hill Creamery, and I did another a goat farm up in the mountains, Spinning Spider Creamery. These are people that are new to farming, but they had a lot in common with the farms that I profiled that, you know, were traditional family farms.
Right.
Is it your impression that these enterprises are economically profitable, or are these just sort of ways that people can do what they want to do and, you know, just kind of eke out a living?
Well, I didn't get the impression that any of the people that I profiled were doing it as a hobby. Chapel Hill Creamery would be a good example of that. Because they work very, very hard, and the cows are on a schedule that doesn't vary. And I actually asked Portia, I said, has it turned out to be more work than you thought it would be? And she gave a big sigh and said, oh, yeah. But, you know, they love it, but it's not. These seem to be people who are very dedicated to what they're doing. They're not backyard gardeners by any stretch.
Well, Bill Morris, I want to add, before we take a break, I want to ask Charles Blackburn if the people that he wrote about and put in his article about the North Carolina Agricultural Hall of Fame, would these people approve of what the kinds of farming enterprises that we've been talking about, the new age farming?
Oh, I think so. These people are all very innovative, and they were looking out for new ways to expand this whole economy. And, you know, just generally speaking, there were always problems with some crops, you know, the boll weevil and cotton, until that was solved. They're always looking for other things that might kind of hedge their bets. And I think they would be very enthusiastic about what's being done.
Well, Charles, thanks so much. You're in Bill's article about North Carolina agriculture, and Vicki, the things that you've described make me want to get that magazine out and read it again.
Good.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Bill Morris, Vicki Jarrett, editor of Our State Magazine. Ron Stutz and I are visiting about the August issue of Our State Magazine. And Vicki, we've had wonderful conversations with Bob Garner about the Signal article about barbecue in the August issue. And we've talked about agriculture and Bill Morris's great article about alternative farming. What have we missed?
Well, before we leave agriculture entirely behind, I just want to mention that we've talked in depth about a lot of kind of serious stories about agriculture, but we balance that with a really beautiful photo essay that I think everyone will really enjoy, kind of a breath of fresh country air is the best way I can describe it, so I hope everyone will enjoy that. But not getting too far out of the field, our Tar Heel People story for this month is about a wonderful couple, John and Faye Bond, who live in Oriental or just outside of Oriental. And it's about their watermelon party, I guess is the best way to describe it. And I really love that article. We have a wonderful picture of the two of them, and especially with Faye Bond's knife that she got from her mother. And it reminds me so much of a knife that my grandmother used. It was kind of her trusty knife that she used for everything. And apparently, Faye Bond feels that way about this knife. It is the one that she uses for cutting up these watermelons. And, Bill, you can talk better about how long they've been doing this and maybe how many watermelons she actually cuts up every year for this.
Well, this was a very interesting story. Well, it was a lot of fun for me to do. We'll let the readers decide how interesting it is. But I went over to Oriental, and the Bonds have been hosting this watermelon cutting since 1969, where they get a truckload of watermelons and invite everyone in town and anyone who happens to be in town that day. It's always on the second Sunday in August. And they just serve watermelon until they run out. And conservative estimate of in the 30s, this will be the 38th year, they've served over 2,000 watermelons.
That's a lot of cutting.
How do you get invited?
You just show up. You do not need to be invited. They send out cards, but those are just to local people to remind them. They also have it announced in all the churches in town and probably in the county. On the day of, to remind people to show up. They have a brass band that plays, and they have it in their front yard, which is across the road from the Neuse River. So everyone's got a view, and everyone gets about as much watermelon as he or she can eat.
And I should add, the invitation is really charming. It ends with, rain date, wait 5 minutes.
And I thought one of the most remarkable things about this is that they have never been rained out. And if you've ever been along the Neuse River in August, the thunderstorms come through there fairly regularly, but they've never been rained out.
All right, now, what is the date?
Second Sunday in August.
All right.
Which I think makes that the 13th or something like that this year.
Well, that's a great find, Bill Morris. And are all the watermelons local, or what?
They come from up in Bertie County, I believe. They're fairly local, and it all started when Mr. Bond grew up on a farm in Bertie County, and one of his brother-in-law, I believe it was, planted just a bumper crop of watermelons. And he ended up with a truckload of watermelons, and he was planning to sell them. And his wife, Faye, said, well, why don't we just have a party?
Oh, man, I love that idea.
And that's
how it all began. And one year, the closest they came to getting rained out is they had a rainy morning, and it kind of cut down on attendance. So they ended up with a lot of extra watermelons. And so on Monday, John took all the watermelons down to the business district in Oriental, and of course everyone's car was unlocked, and he left a watermelon in everyone's
car. Well, I wish I'd been there.
I think you called it a reverse crime spree.
Do they chill them, or do they just serve them at room temperature?
No, they chill them.
And how do they do that? How do you get that many watermelons chilled?
I'm going to say the Shriners Club, but it's one of the service clubs down there has a big refrigerator truck. And that's how they chill them.
It would have to be big for that many watermelons.
Yeah.
Well, Bill, thanks so much for sharing that. Anything else, Vicki?
Oh, well, of course, I can't go without mentioning the Bluffs Restaurant.
Well, I'm glad. I wish we had time to talk about it, but this is an article Vicki asked me to write about a wonderful place up on the Blue Ridge Parkway where smart people...
We just
people,
have to say that Bob Garner's not the only one that eats, for our sake.
I'm glad to be in the second rank, but wherever you send me with that has eating involved, I'm very happy. And it is interesting. This is the Bluffs is kind of a mixed bag in the sense that everybody along the parkway has to be a concessionaire of the Park Service, and mm-hmm. so they have to accommodate themselves to that. But with local people cooking local food, you can be pretty sure that notwithstanding the overlay of government regulations, you're going to get good things to eat. And so a great trip for people from Chapel Hills.
Now let me just ask, did you try the blackberry cobbler?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Did you try more than one helping?
I did. It was great. I had such good, we're out of time, but I had such good cobbler that I had a hard time getting up and eating breakfast. I was so full still the next day. But anyway, thanks for letting me do that, Vicki. And thanks, Bill Morris, for helping us today and for your great articles. And Vicki, I look forward to visiting with you about a month from now about the September issue.
Absolutely.
Thanks to all y'all for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.